Hey everybody, welcome to yet another episode of Mike and Scotty and Crew Call. And this is episode 5-11, and we've managed to cut the elapsed time in between podcasts from 4 months to 2 months. So we're making progress here.
Yeah, well, I
How you
think
doing?
you know we're now that I've become a kind of a regular guest host, I think you're prompting me, I'm prompting you, and that motivation's good.
Got to do it. We've had a lot of interaction lately on the model railroading front anyway.
Yep.
Scott was kind enough to volunteer to cut, laser cut a pair of kits for a building that
and I will
a tricky
never
little
do that
thing.
again, just so
Yeah,
you know. But
no good deed ever goes unpunished. So, and I don't really remember how much of this we talked about before, if at all, but these are the P&E offices. And, you know, it's kind of a normal building except for the gable ends on the roof, and that's what turns it into some extreme weirdness. So,
yeah, it's just got a weird. It never ceases to amaze me that the most mundane building,
right?
Like some architect on LSD has to sit back and say, "Well, how can I just complicate the hell out of this thing?"
It has to be a kitbash. That's the only thing I can think of. You know, it was probably modified at some point, but. A modeling friend of mine down in my modeling area, Chris Murley, took the liberty of measuring the entire building and doing a scale drawing for it, which I gave to Scott. And he also came up with a lot of prototype pictures for me. And he asked me if I would construct a model for him while I'm building mine. So this is really the first time I've ever built two of the same thing at the same time. It's very efficient. But it's a little weird, you know, because I've never had to do it. You've probably done it for all I know.
Well, I've not only done it on several occasions, but I'm about to undertake a threesome where two of the models are in O scale and one is in HO, but it's
All
the
right,
same building.
So we'll get to that. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
O scale, interesting. There were some, ups and downs with the laser cutting, but not so much with the building, right? That was more the inserts, right? For the
So Sam, you've heard me talk. I know Mike, Sam, and I think our listeners have heard me talk about him. But Sam and I own a laser cutter and a 3D printer, which we conveniently keep at his house. I love that aspect of it,
yep.
And he is incredibly gracious. I text him, I say, "Hey, what are you doing this afternoon?" "Nothing, come on over." So, we get it done. But it was kind of the perfect storm in a number of really annoying ways. The first was that my schedule was just crazy, crazy.
But not when you agreed to do it.
Yeah, no,
You
not
got
when I
busy
agreed to
right
do it.
after that.
It was, like immediately following. And then he was away for a few weeks.
Which never
And
happens.
Which hardly ever happens because he's definitely a homebody. But we also have a little bit of an issue with our CAD programs talking to each other. So, I work off of a Mac. There are very few CAD programs from Mac. And because what I do is basically just really, really rudimentary 2D CAD, I have bought and have always used the cheapest CAD program made for CAD. It's a program called TurboCAD 2D. Problem with TurboCAD 2D is they say on any form you go on, it has issues with the current Mac operating systems. And those issues can be really problematic.
And it's an old program, so yeah.
Well, because it's a $80 program, they've never put the time into it to make the adjustments they need. And they figure, we don't really want to sell this thing anyway. We want to sell its big brothers.
Sure.
I just don't need that level of technology. And by the way, because I'm a Luddite, it would take me close to forever to get through the learning curve anyway. This is
That's
perfect.
like me with the focus stacking software. You know, the least expensive one is probably way more than I need. I just feed
Exactly.
the files into it and say, render it, and hopefully it works.
So I drew it out. I sent it to Sam. He always double checks my math, and he calls me, says, "This something's wrong." He said, "This is way off. The long walls are 4 inches long." I'm like, "Well, that's definitely not right, because I know that they're like 7.5."
Right.
So I went over there and we finally figured it out, but it took hours. We
You might
cut
have
it,
more
and I
time into
brought
this than I
home.
do.
Well, exactly. And this is what can happen, when you're dealing with different CAD programs, with the quirkiness of this particular program. I got it, we cut it, cut two, brought them home, and I'm looking, I'm like, I don't think this looks right. And what I realized was that the math I used to draw the chipboard gable end was different than the math I used to draw the clapboard peaked wall underneath it
So there's more
behind.
than one kind of math.
Well, it's different, and so it ended up being different angles.
New math, old math.
It's Roman math is what it was. So I never trust the Romans. So I ended up having to redraw it, and then of course our schedule was conflicted again, and it took forever, and then we finally
Meanwhile,
got
I'm
it right,
dying
and
for
I
my
put it.
window fillers. I had 60
Well,
windows
that was the
I
other
needed to
piece.
fill.
So we drew and cut out a dozen brick window fillers out of some prescribed brick that we had cut for the Haywood Mills diorama, and we drew it wrong. And by the way, you needed like 60, not 12.
Right.
So we got it. We got
You
everything
showed
done,
up with
and
that little
I put
baggie,
it
and
in
I
the mail.
thought, uh-oh.
Yeah, this doesn't look right. I put it in the mail, and like you always have that fear. And I knew, like, after 4 days when you hadn't gotten it, I'm like, I was just so frustrated at that point. Like, I'm just gonna recut.
So you cut
Ended
those
up,
three times, basically.
yeah, we three times, yeah.
Jeez.
And the USPS is such a well-run, well, I shouldn't trash them, but
They
you just.
generally have been very good for me, but boy, when it goes off the rails, so to speak, there's no getting it back on.
Well,
I've
the
got that
bottom line.
informed delivery, which I don't know if you use it also, but every day in my email, I get pictures of the mail that I'm expecting that day. So,
Yep. I just put it in a padded envelope and sent it first class, and of course it didn't show up.
first class. On Friday, I got a picture of a check that a customer was sending me, and I went down to the mailbox. Nothing but a piece of junk mail. So I thought, I guess I'll get it on Saturday. Went down on Saturday. Nope. Went down today. Nope. So it exists because I saw the picture. Beyond that, I don't know if it's on the floor of the mail truck under the seat or on the floor at my local post office with a box on top of it. Something tells me I'll never see that either. Maybe it's partying with that second shipment of window inserts that you did.
It could be. It could be. But anyway, you got it, and
Yeah. So
you're
that
doing.
enabled me to rather quickly finish up the Lion Brewery corner, which immediately made me start thinking, yeah, this P&E thing is going to go fast because it's a very shallow scene, you know what I mean? So it doesn't take a lot to turn it into a it's not like doing Pittston Yard, you know what I mean? 22 feet by 2 feet deep. That took a while to do the ground cover there, but on a narrow shelf, it's really fast. So if I get this office done, then that only leaves that area in the middle in front of Carbon Technologies, and I'll probably do the area in front. So that whole contiguous wall will have ground cover, and it'll just leave the bump in to do as a like a dis discrete project, But that's not why we're here, and that's not what we're going to talk about. That was just kind of a teaser.
Well, why are we here?
Well, I get these ideas,
I've warned you in the past about thinking.
I can't stop them. They just keep coming. And
You know, before you launch this, I just want to preface this by saying, you know, you and you do this publicly. It's not like we're talking behind Mike C's back. We love Mike C.
just
But
talking with him today, in fact.
you accuse, you label Mike C as maybe being an overthinker.
Mr. Fussy.
Mr. Fussy.
It's an it's a term he's embraced, and everyone now calls him that.
So I'm going to label you. You are Mr. Fussy Jr. Or
So
Mr.
a lesser
Fussy
fuss,
Light. Mr. Fussy Light.
lower level of fussiness.
So take your pick. That's your new name.
Well, we'll see if you still feel that way when I'm done here. So,
Well, and I will say this. There's nothing wrong with that.
okay.
His layout and your layout are a reflection on your desire to be as accurate and perfect as possible, and you both succeeded.
Oh,
Continue, please.
I was very influenced by his approach and attention to detail when I was first starting out, and that resulted in the first big layout kaboom, and it's kind of been that way ever since. You know, it just kind of resolved like a kaleidoscope for me. You know, I said, okay, I see what I want to do here, and operating on his layout kind of taught me to operate, and now I operate a lot on my own layout, which is kind of what you build it for, right? Sometimes it's a couple
Some
times
people
a
do.
week. Sometimes it's just, you know, me and my buddy Dave. Sometimes another friend of ours, Jim Reddington, comes over, or Kevin Smith, a new guy who used to work for the Arizona and California Railroad. He's on the spear board now. When you're not trying to throw a baseball, sometimes you even show up. So, you know, and this is in addition to the regular people who would, you know, normally be at Mike's op sessions or mine. So, I was up there yesterday at Mike's, and we were at lunch talking about how I'm finally at a point with the layout that when I do any projects, there's really nothing that's going to prevent operations for more than a week or two. You know, there's nothing that is a kaboomy, you know, in nature. That
I'm starting to
said,
hyperventilate a little bit here, so.
yeah, no, so that said, to so with I got to start at the beginning, so there's a little bit of background here, some of which you know, some of which you may not know, but when I designed the addition, I had to design all the changes to the layout, and at that time I was well aware of the need for staging, and I had an existing 8-track Allentown staging yard, 26 feet long, actually, if you include the ladder. And that's underneath the entire length of Pittston Yard. So that serves as the southern terminus for the D&H and for Conrail. And then I built in two more staging yards for the north end. I built in a Conrail north staging yard and a D&H north staging yard. And those were each 4 tracks. Basically, the same capacity as Allentown staging, with the thought process being that, you know, you're going to have over time the equal number of north and south trains, and they need a place to go. And as long as you don't fill up all the tracks and have no place to go, you're always going to have like a nice balance there. And I have about, I think I have 5 Conrail Road trains and probably a similar number of D&H trains, which always gives us an empty track or two. And you know, it works. So the operations of the layout during an op session always go smoothly, no problem. What I did find was that since all of these staging yards were stub-ended, the restaging of trains is ranged from a minor nuisance to a real pain in the neck. The D&H yard in particular was really hard to restage a train on because it's fed by 2 36-inch radius curve turn back curves on a 2% grade. Other than that, you know, it was easy.
All
So the
right, what's the
first thing I
problem?
did was put a ladder at the other end of these, you know, at the stub end of the Binghamton staging yard, and curve that out so it had a tail track going underneath where Milazzo Industries is. You know where I'm talking about, that long white building. And that was orders of magnitude better. Not ideal, because the tail track wasn't a train length track, and the D&H more than Conrail required some cars to be swapped out of the trains. And I would do that with my little A-line carts and rolling the cart over and balancing it sometimes precariously. And one day, an entire A-line box tipped over onto the floor and dumped out several freight cars, one of which broken beyond repair. And I looked at that and I thought, this is a problem that needs solving. So I thought about that and thought about that. And I ended up with my solution, which was the using the bridge that connects the P&E on top at a lower level to take me to a new staging yard down the full length of the workshop. That's those three tracks that are underneath the Pocono Northeast on that workshop wall. And anybody, by the way, that has the April issue of RMC, there's a full track plan in there, so you might be able to follow along with this. I'm trying to be as descriptive as I can. Yep. So by incorporating that staging yard there, three train length tracks with very easy access and a nice long tail for moving the power around, it's not that it was easier. It's that it was so much easier that I thought, geez, this is, I wish there was a way to incorporate this with the other two staging yards, you know. But the Sayre staging yard stubbins under the Doria viaduct there. And the Allentown staging yard stubs out against the Lackawanna River there at Piston Junction. So neither one of those yards had any real estate beyond.
Yeah.
And really, I thought about that for, I don't know, weeks, maybe months. And I've often felt that if you think about something long enough, there's always a solution you can come up with if you put your mind to it, you know. And I'm also influenced by other guys in the hobby, you know. And I remember my buddy Ken McCory came down one January, not this past January, but the year before. And you've been to Ken, so you know how big his layout is. Yep. And the last time I had visited him, he was putting in a helix and going down to a fourth level on his layout, under the layout, to add more staging. And I said, Ken, you know, your layout is like three times larger than my gigantic layout, and you needed more staging. He says, you could never have enough staging. You could make an argument for more staging than you have visible track. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, you know, your staging is representing the outside world, right? Points beyond. And the more of the outside world that you have, the more you can incorporate interesting things coming on and off the layout. Now, I thought about that and I said, you know, that's hard to argue with. His goal to increase his staging was to send a train to staging, and maybe you don't see that train for 6 months. You know, it's just away.
He explained this to us too when we were there together.
Yeah, this is exactly, but he's taken it like to a like another level, you know. So, you know, people tell me things and it gets stuck in my cranium, and I might not think about it for days, weeks, or months, and then sometimes it'll just pop out again and I'll think, wonder if there's any application for that here. Because ideally, what would I like to do? I would like to have Allentown and Sayre, the north and south main, you know, stub-ended yards, be double-ended.
Yeah.
Now it continues from that, but stay with me. So I thought, where do I have real estate for that? And I started thinking about it. I said, how would I get to it? You know, so I thought about it and I thought about it. And then one day I was on my walk, because a lot of these thoughts come when I'm either biking or on my walk. And I thought about it and I said, you know, when I built Pittston Yard, the new Pittston Yard as it exists now, It used to be the same width as the staging yard underneath, but I decided for the new building that I was going to add another track on the outside and make that the main line, which gave me an extra yard track, which is a I'm glad I did that because we use them all. And that so that protruded about 2.5 inches, into the aisle more, and was completely unnoticeable, right? Didn't affect our ability to walk up and down that aisle, so no issues. And then I thought, that real estate underneath that at staging level is available. How could I make use of that? So I got home from my walk, I got my tape measure. It's just me, so I'm measuring these long distances. I clamped one end of the tape measure to the layout at one point, and I'm pulling it around the curved corner, and measuring it out.
Thank
26 feet. And these are my, so 26 feet, how many quarter inches is that? Basically, if I come off of Allentown staging track one with an additional turnout, and I just come into the aisle just enough to get another track alongside of it and start to descend, by the
Yep.
time I get past Pittston Junction, I can get under the layout. So now I'm thinking, if I can get under the layout, I've got the entire real estate under the layout available to me. So, and I'm doing it at a normal grade, regular 2% grade. The curves are going to be like 48-inch radius curves. So, no problem with, full trains doing it. So I start to think, okay, where can I put another yard underneath all of this? And I looked at all of the length of underneath Duryea there where where the automotive junkyard is and the crossovers and all of that. That's not long enough, but you can start to use that area. And then the opening where we go through into DuPont used to be the doorway into my basement, a people door.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's a full length opening. So no problem going through that to get into the original basement. So I thought, beautiful. I'll just take a right and go underneath that area where Pittston Yard used to live. And that was a big long footprint. So I'll see what I can do there. And that idea was sailing along nicely until I looked underneath the layout. This is one another one of these I'm on my walk things. I get back, I go look under the layout. Unfortunately, on top, the depth of the wall there is not the same as underneath because there's a foundation wall there. So I didn't have enough
Okay.
width underneath to do the 2 feet that I needed for the 8 tracks. So I thought, okay, let me think about that further. So then I thought, what if I went the other way? What if instead of taking a right as I went through that area, take a left and make a big broad curve underneath the Kerr-McGee tie treatment plant there, opposite the furnace room. And I've
Yep.
then and if I do that, I've got the entire length going down all underneath Taylor Yard and even around the corner if I needed a tail track. Boku length. And I thought, okay, that solves my Allentown problem because it's plenty long enough, I can get to it, and all is well.
Yep.
So now I'm thinking, okay, I talked about it with Dave, and of course he raises an eyebrow and goes, whoa. I said, you go home and you just think about it a little bit because he's got a good operational mind. He said, I'm looking for good reasons not to do it because, there's always a case for and a case against for anything you're going to do. So next time he came over, I said, I was thinking about it and I was thinking, well, it solves my Allentown problem big time. But we have an imbalance because I still have a relatively short Sayre yard, stub ended.
Right. What happens when you get to the other end of the line?
Exactly. Because without the stagings being somewhat symmetrical, you don't have a full solution. You know what I mean? So I started thinking about that and thinking about that. Maybe a week went by. Once again, I'm on my walk. I'm not even to Chase Road. I'm just walking down my drive. And I thought, whoa, Wait a minute. I think I've got it. I almost turned around, but I said, no, take your walk. Keep thinking about it. It'll be there when you get back. So I waited out the 45 minutes until I got back with my walk. And what I came up with was a crossover underneath where Ransom is. And you know where Ransom is. It's right before the swing gate, where the north and south tracks are parallel to one another. They're about 2.5 inches apart, track centers. If I put a number 10 crossover there, then a northbound train can take that crossover, get onto the bridge, get into Allentown staging, and go down that descending track. So basically, the layout with that point, instead of being point to point, would have the ability to be a loop. And if I stage it right, leaving, not stage it right, but if I block it right, leaving Pittston or leaving Mehoopany, that train can end up in the double-ended staging yard. And all you'd need to do is swap the power and the caboose. It would take you like 3 minutes to restage a train, and you'd be ready to roll with that train. Now that's attractive. The other reason I was thinking about wanting to do this is I was looking for a particular car, and I couldn't find it. And I ended up looking through all of my A-line boxes. And there's a lot of boxes almost filled with cars. I've got, I don't know, 8 or 10 A-line boxes just covered hoppers, not even in use. I've got enough coal cars for multiple coal trains. I've got a Conrail work train. I've got auto racks. You know what I mean? I've got all kinds of cars that never run on the layout. And you're saying, well, did they run on your line? Well, trains would detour, right? I mean, you could on an occasional basis, you can make an excuse for just about anything. So if you had this additional staging, you could get locomotives out of cabinets, you could get cars out of boxes. And if you had people, you know, visitors, like say civilians, and they just wanted to run a train from one end to the other, you could do that. You know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of reasons where having something like this would solve a lot of problems. And really, all you have to do is build it. So I said, okay, let me see what I need to build it. Turns out you need a lot of track to do this.
Well,
Like
hell yeah.
a lot of track. I think I concluded I needed 145 pieces of flex track to do this. And you know what track costs?
And is that how much you ordered?
I haven't ordered it yet. This is going to be the final vetting of this solution, I think. So I cost the whole thing out, and it was like $2,000. And I said, "What are you, high? Is it worth that to you?" So I said, "I have to think about that. This is a value proposition. I have to, you know, think about it, you know." And then the more I thought about it, the more I wanted to do it. So I said, let me look at these costs again. And then I started asking a few questions. I talked to our buddy Lance Mindheim, and I said, Lance, you know, I want to do a staging yard, but you know, I just want quality track. It doesn't need to be microengineering at $8 a piece or Pico at $7 a piece. I could use Atlas Code 83 if you say it's any good. And he said Atlas Code 83 is perfectly fine for a staging yard. And he said you should also take a look at the new Walther's flex track too. He says it's excellent and it's only maybe 40 cents more a piece. So I looked at that and then I thought, well, geez, I'm using the new Walther's turnouts in Crestwood, and I've had no problem really with them at all. And when I looked at the price, I mean, I could save probably $12 or $13 per turnout by using the Walthers over Picos. You know, the ladders are going to be really simple. It's going to be seven number six rights on one end and seven number six rights on the other. I won't need to power them because they'll be right up front. You know, from a maintenance standpoint, should be, you know, really a non-issue. So when I looked at that, I was able to save a lot of money, like about $800 worth off of the thing. And now I'm looking at that and I'm going, That's not bad. You know, it's still a lot of money, but when I look at it, I think, well, can't take it with
Right.
And when I look at the number of turnouts on the layout, if you had to guess, how many turnouts do you think are on my layout? Just a wild guess.
Actually, you told me not too long ago,
Did
and
I?
I forget the number, but I know it's hundreds.
Yeah, it's like 160 turnouts, not including the existing staging yards.
Yeah.
So, you know, you start multiplying that times 35 bucks or whatever a turnout costs, and then you think, yeah, nothing good comes from doing that calculation. You know, we're gonna forget we just did that, but it puts it in perspective.
You basically look. Anybody, to me, anybody that builds a model railroad, regardless of the size, that is punching numbers into a calculator, probably shouldn't be building a model railroad. And I will use you
Oh,
as an
treat it like a
example.
boat.
Well, so to me,
Hole in the water that you pour
what is
money
the
into.
happiness that this layout brings you, you know, in the various aspects of its evolution,
Right,
right?
right.
So. Now put a dollar amount, dollar value to that. You can't. Not to mention the fact that, you know, because we're all experiencing this phenomenon of getting older, right? We all have to face, or someone is going to have to face the inevitable proposition of what to do with what we leave behind.
That's their problem.
It's their problem, but, you know, 99. Well, let's say 100% of the time, you know, and not to depress you, you know,
Not going to use the dumpster word.
it's going to the dumpster.
Ugh.
The rolling stock and the locomotives will be sold at auction. Everything else is going in a 30-yard, well, in your case, probably three 30-yard dumpsters.
Not the trees. That would be nuts.
But that's what happens to it, right? So if it gives you enjoyment during your lifetime. And it's practical to do. I mean, look,
That's
you
the
know,
only
you
calculus, isn't it?
right. It's the only calculus. I mean, if you can't afford to do it, you can't afford to do it. That's a different story. If
Right.
it's just a question of should I can afford to do it, but should I do it? Well, then I think that that's a moot conversation.
Well, I've always said just because you can do something doesn't mean you should, right? So
Well.
I think any kind of a decision that's you know not a $20 decision benefits from a you know a structured walkthrough. Just examine it. Are there any holes in this?
Right, but you can make that argument about just about anything, including the fact that you built the layout in the first place.
Well, okay.
So that's one thing. Yet from a logistical, you know, traffic, you know, model railroad operation standpoint, you know, the size of your staging yards is predicated on other factors, right? The lengths of your trains, the size of the layout, how many trains you want to operate. What types of trains? You know, your Conrail trains tend to be fairly long trains by model railroad standards.
Yep. Sort of the
Right.
B&H trains. I mean, they're all pretty much
And the D&H
similar. Yeah.
trains, you know, P&E, not so much.
No, those are locals.
So, you know, I mean, to me, you know. Then, you know, the variables become, you know, how often do you want to operate? How many operators do you want down there? And again, that's predicated by the size of the layout, number
Yep.
of trains you want to run, and the aisle space.
Yeah, and this really doesn't affect the aisles at all. The other thing
It doesn't
I've noticed
affect the aisle space.
in my advanced age, anything you can do to address the pain in the neck factor is probably worth doing.
So to me, it's a no-brainer that you do it. I guess, you know, having built model railroads, you know, I guess it any of the advice I would give you, and far be it for me to give you advice, so take it for what it's worth, is the Atlas Code 83 FlexTrac is perfect. You will have no problems with it.
Yep.
I don't like Walther's turnouts. I think they're very, very fragile.
The new ones?
Yeah, I think they look pretty good. The thing I like about the Pecos is they're bulletproof.
They are.
And for something that is below sea level, The fewer maintenance issues you can build in for yourself, the happier you're going to be. And if you're not talking about a substantial number of turnouts, I'd go with the Walther's Flex Track or the Atlas Flex Track and the Peyco turnouts. But that's just
I
me.
think we're talking about 15 turnouts.
So sell an A-line box of cars. I really thought, when you the fact that you've basically standardized on the Pecos was really, really a smart move.
It changed everything. It really
I had
did.
a layout full of the Walther's turnouts, and they were just, they ran good, but if you
But you're talking
sneak
about
in.
the Shinohara, the old Shinoharas, right?
Nope.
These new Walther's turnouts haven't been around that long.
Well, I mean, maybe there's a new generation
Well,
that
I
I'm
mean, yeah,
not
they're like
aware
3 years old, I think.
of. Then all right. Forget I said anything. I'll need to see one and
Yeah,
step
no,
on it.
they better work because that they're all over Crestwood.
Yeah. Well. So, maybe we're talking apples and oranges here. I mean, if it were me, I would do it. I guess if I had one concern, it's you keep building bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Been accused of that.
Truth hurts, doesn't
Might
it?
be true.
It might be. And I guess I think you might get to a point where you, and maybe you already have, you've built way more than you can ever operate.
Don't think so. I mean, we kind of use the whole layout all the time.
How many in an operating session? Well, let me rephrase it. What is the goal of number of different trains that you would like to have run over the layout?
Well, I'll give you an overview of like the typical cycle, right? And the only and you know we do a perpetual operation. So we just pick up right where we left off. We don't really do much except restage a train that needs restaging in between. So it's perpetual operation. So it's designed so that from an operational schema that if I want to go down and do something, I can do whatever I want. And doesn't screw everything up. The only thing that screws everything up is when you move things out of the plan, like for taking pictures of an article. That January effort screwed things up bigly. But it's usually once or twice a week. My buddy Dave and I are running trains. Like I said, sometimes another friend comes over, and sometimes it's four or five people. But it's kind of irrelevant to the operational schema. So. From the Conrail side, Conrail only ran one northbound and one southbound a day on the line, separated by 12 hours. So we never, ever run a north and a southbound Conrail the same day.
Okay.
And what usually happens is we'll be running some road trains on a particular session. And then those road trains are setting off and picking up. And there's some yard work that creates locals. And then we'll have one or two sessions where we're just doing locals. We're delivering and picking up from consignees. And the short lines are just like an additional consignee for Conrail. Stuff goes back and forth from Conrail to D&H and vice versa. So the flow of traffic is continuous. And there are small locals, big locals, and road trains. What was your original question? What do we do?
What
So
is
we
what
use the
is
whole layout because the road trains traverse the whole layout.
Yep.
The interchange trains go from one railroad to the other. D&H has trackage rights on Conrail for different hunks of it. So, you might not get to Laceyville every op session, but by the the third op session, you're getting to Lacyville, as an example. You know what I mean? So there's really no area of the layout that goes unused. The Pocono Northeast hasn't been run the past couple or three times because areas have been under construction, and it's just like, we've got plenty of other stuff to do. I don't need to be moving construction stuff just to run the P&E this time. But you know, I'm very close to that being back in action. In fact, we're operating Wednesday night. I'll probably run the P&E that night, you know. So if it answers your question, the way the routes for the various locals, even, I mean, you know, if you go to Crestwood, you're traversing most of the layout to get there. So the whole thing kind of gets used all the time.
You know, and I suspect too that the operating sessions will probably increase as you're finishing these sections of the layout.
I'll probably operate more often. I'm not looking to do larger sessions in terms of the numbers of people, you know.
You don't really like people.
I don't. And the people I like, I only kind of like. So there's that.
Right.
I
There's
barely
no
like
real
you.
attachment.
What I find is, if I get more than, say, five people at an op session, I never run a train. I'm just herding cats. I'm basically a road foreman, you know. I'm just going around answering questions and directing things, and you know, the inevitable little things you have to deal with.
Well,
And you know,
interesting.
it's do you want to be worried about keeping seven or eight or nine people busy all the time, and when they're not, they're gabbing instead of focusing on the operations. You know what I mean? Even Confalone has gone with much smaller op sessions, and he's enjoying it that way too.
Well, I think you have the ability to relax. You know,
Right. They could do
I
some
knew some.
two-man crews, which helps a little. There's still a lot of bodies in the aisles, you know. It feels really just right with around five people.
I knew Dick Elwell for 30 years.
He had big
And
aisles, though, didn't he?
well, not in his original house where the layout was originally built, that wasn't the case.
Right. But the
When
layout I saw seemed to have really big
yes,
aisles.
when he built his new house, he purposely planned for much larger aisles. He could have built a bigger layout, but like you, it was built for operation, and he understood that congestion factor based on experience. But I would say in 30 years, I probably operated on that layout during 75% of all the operating sessions that he had in that
Okay.
time.
Yeah. And what was the typical crew size?
It varied. It could be anywhere from five or six people to sometimes there were so many people would have to double up. We'd tag team it, but I as you were saying this, and you were talking about, you're just the road foreman. I don't think I ever saw him run a train once during an operating session.
Right.
If I went over there and we were, talking about, building some new switching area or, whatever the case is, he or I would run a train around. In fact, when I was learning the layout, I would go over there and he would have me take out a train, and simulate an operating session, just to get used to, where everything was.
Did he operate himself in between sessions when the mood struck him?
Yes, the short answer is yes. But and I'm sure you know this too, the larger the layout, right, the greater the regular maintenance it requires, track cleaning,
I was afraid of that, because of the almost doubled in size thing that I did. And I mean, track cleaning is one thing, but it's almost something you do continuously. And you don't need to clean the whole layout every time you operate. What I generally do, if I'm having a bunch of people over, I'll take the track cleaning train and run it over the whole main line, do it again, including the sidings. And then I'll, like a place like Mehoopany, I might take the block and just kind of go over the whole thing. But I haven't found other than that that it has been too much of a burden, and the layout lets you know when it needs cleaning. Now, part of that is because every engine has a power pack in it, you know what I mean? So a little bit of dirt here and there doesn't halt things. If I start seeing power packs timing out, I think, okay, I got some real dirt here.
Dick had a lot of elderly hand-laid track on his layout. And interestingly enough, whenever there was a track maintenance issue, it was not in that track. It was in the newer stuff.
Interesting.
But, so there would be, after every operating session, he'd keep a punch list and
Sure.
go back through maybe, a signal that wasn't working right or,
Yep.
switch that needed to be resoldered or something
You know something, if
that
you've
had.
got the time to build a giant enterprise, it takes a fraction of that time to maintain it. So, I mean, by definition, when you're done building it, should be able to still maintain it.
Well, I think too, the environments in which we build our layouts now are much different than they were 50, 60 years ago, right? We have
Yep.
drop ceilings.
Right. Air
We
conditioning in
have
my case, dehumidification.
Sealed floors, dehumidification. So you're not getting the environment, the outside environment in that space like you were in the good old days.
That's true. Although
And
I
that
gotta
helps
say
too.
that the most maintenance intensive item on the layout is probably the swing gate. And it is not, there's been a lot of minor modifications to it since it was put in. I'm able to adjust everything relating to the swing gate in under 5 minutes. So that's been an incremental kind of a thing, because it started out with zero adjustability. And then the layout tells you what it needs, and I have to do, maybe a 10-minute tweaking 3 times a year, seasonal adjustments, because even with dehumidification and air conditioning in the summer and heat in the winter, geez, I was down to 18% humidity down there this winter. And it's probably 55 or 60 during the summer with dehumid and air conditioning. So that's a pretty good swing, you know what I mean? So, but by now, all of the areas that needed to have the proper expansion spots designed into it, that's been done long ago. So none of that is an issue. The swing gate, you want it to be perfect because there's, I don't know, 8 or 9 connections to it. So you want it to be just right. You want to be able to go across that swing gate like it's not even there. And
Well, and not to get too off track, no pun intended, but the engineering that went into that was amazing.
it's worth it because I put all my eggs in that one basket. I didn't want to have to be ducking under anywhere, you know.
I was just it's such a substantial piece of construction.
Well, it is
It's funny,
welded steel, so it ought to be.
it's funny. I was thinking about it this weekend when we were out in Chicago. We rented a house and there was a security front security gate and it was wrought iron.
Yeah.
And to move it, it had that substantial feel to it. And I thought, this is the swing gate. This is what it reminds me of.
Well,
There is some,
you notice
you
it
can tell
closes
it's
with
heavy.
a very satisfying ka-junk, right?
Which is exactly what you want.
So I needed to move like a bank vault, and fortunately, I worked with a great welder who just got it. I explained to him that the tolerances on this needed to be really, really tight, to the point where when he was welding on the hinges, he said, "You notice these hinges have nylon inserts. We don't want to melt those." So he had a wet rag, and he would make a weld and immediately put a wet rag on the hinge to cool it, so it didn't melt the nylon, which is why the hinges still work great, Little things like that.
So you've sold me on the concept.
So if I'm gonna do this, I'm thinking the approach is a piece of cake, just very straightforward, just building the 26-foot, well, it'd be more than that, it'd be probably 26, 30, probably 34-foot long decline to get to the ladder, the first ladder. What I'm trying to get in my head is, like, obviously you're probably not going to build it in place. You're going to want to probably, sectionalize the yard and put it together somehow. So I'm trying to get the build order in my head. You know what I mean? Because otherwise I'm going to be spec. But I'm going to glue everything down. I'll make a couple of spacer sticks that'll make it easy for me to position all the tracks with the wet glue and all of that. So, but it's just, you're going to have, there's going to be a ladder section on each end, and which will basically be mirrors of one another. And then you're going to have the big curves under Kerr McGee there. And then some gentle curves kind of leading up to that. You know what I mean? I guess those will be the transitional sections. So I might have to actually like lay it all out in cardboard or something just to get the plywood cut to be very straightforward. But I'm going to need to, obviously I'm going to need to go underneath and do some connecting. But then, it'll all be the same polarity. So I will need a reversing section at the number 10 crossovers under Ransom. So I've been thinking about how best I'm going to do that. Basically going to cut out the existing track that's there and remove the track and the sub road bed. And then I'm going to get a piece of ply with the same thickness as the cork, build the crossover on that piece of plywood, slide it in place. So, and make it in a way that if I need to remove it for maintenance, I can. The one thing I haven't thought out is exactly where I will need to build in a reversing section of good size consist length, but it's going to include a track on the bridge. So I want to think that through a little bit too. Plus, I'm going to need another NCE booster.
How many of those do you have kicking around right now?
I have the main unit plus three boosters, so this will be a fourth. Is that a lot?
Oh, yeah, that's a lot. It is really, you built a club size layout in your basement.
Kinda, yeah. I mean, the layout at that point will probably have easily 100 engines on it, all powered. So when you divvy that up by booster, that's about right.
It's interesting too that, I know you've had some people that on occasion have helped you in various ways
Of course.
with the construction of the layout, and I think that goes for everybody unless you're living off grid in Alaska. But you built this huge, and I'll go back to club size layout, pretty much by one person. And you avoided all of the problems that you get when you try to build anything by committee, right?
Well,
That I
that's
don't
true.
believe that a layout of that quality could ever be built by a club. You got so many different talent levels, you got so many different personalities with so many different agendas, and you've been able to just say at the end of the day, you're banging the gavel and you're saying, done, this is how I'm doing it.
I mean,
I appreciate.
I welcome all kinds of creative input, and there are many, many suggestions and recommendations from friends and activities that went into the building of the layout, right? I mean, no man's an island, but you're right. I mean, ultimately, there's one CEO, and that guy wants to be happy. That's the only criteria. The goal is to have fun. I tell people, if it's not fun, you're not doing it
Yeah, we having fun yet?
right.
Well,
I always wake
so
up in the morning and I think, want to get some stuff done today, but what would make today a good day? And I aim for that every single day.
well, we've got fodder for the next 10 podcasts,
Ah!
so this is good.
I hope it doesn't take that long. I'm looking at this as maybe a 2 or 3 week project.
Really? Okay. Well, I mean, you do work fast.
Well, I mean, it's a staging yard. There's no scenery. I'm gonna template as much of the plywood as possible. I've got plenty of cardboard, And then it's just a matter of taking it outside and cutting it up. And once it's all cut up, it's track laying time. I'm going to use the big cork sheets that I've been buying from Amazon. They're about 2x3, and that works great. I just glue that down, and then you lay out all your track. That's going to be a couple feeders to solder on. I mean, you might spend a couple of days doing feeders.
Well, so can't wait for the next podcast and we can
So you
see where
really
you're going.
can't think of one reason not to do it. Not one good reason.
No, because I know that you've already got the engineering figured out. You can justify the reasoning for it, and the justification makes sense to me.
The way I work, if you can't get it in your head, you can't build it.
And you're going to enjoy the process. So, again, getting back to, what's the most important thing, start there. And will you have fun doing it? Yes, then do it.
Yeah, I honestly think that all the benefit I can make the whole case for it, which I just did, and I can't make much of a case against it, really.
Well,
All right, well then this has been formally decided. I'm on record. People
just
are going to know about this. Ken McCrory is in Pennsylvania listening to this, laughing.
well, and I will deny ever agreeing that this was a good idea, just in the event that it goes south.
Try it. You're on record too.
Yeah, I'm sure I am. Whatever. Okay.
So, what are you up to these days?
Oh, just some stuff. There's three or four things on my workbench that I'm working on, and of course I'm in the first month or so of baseball season, and we've got a strange dynamic this year, just to talk about baseball for 30
Oh, wait a
seconds.
minute. Your workshop's still in the garage, right?
Workshop, I
You
have
get
a
that little
workbench.
modeling desk. That.
I've got a modeling desk in the basement
Right.
for when it's too cold to be out there in my feety pajamas
Or too hot.
or too hot. Although I've got, so when I'm working on the museum exhibits and they have to be in the garage, I've got fans blowing out. So I try to, control the climate as best I can in there, because obviously in August and July, it can get tough in there.
Put a mini split out there. You can't take it with you.
Okay. Well, remember, I've got to
Price of a
sell
staging
to
yard.
the chairman of the board, and that's not always
Right.
the easiest thing. So, I'm actually quite happy with what I have and comfortable with it as well. So a couple of things. I'm beginning to both conceptualize and execute the next portions of the train exhibit for the museum. And one piece of it will be a small, much smaller than what I've done up to date, diorama depicting kind of the last interesting piece of the Midland Division main line through Franklin.
So that's
That's it.
HO scale. It's going to match up with everything that's there.
Yeah, it's HO scale, although I actually the time period of it is not consistent with the 1932 time frame that I put on the rest of it, for a couple of reasons. One of the structures is a freight house that is about 3.5 feet long, and that building existed up until about maybe 15 years ago. I was running the town council back then, and the building had been abandoned for several years. I was concerned that it was a fire trap, which it was, and I didn't want to
All
see any
wood
fire.
construction?
I'm sorry?
It was all wood construction?
All wood construction.
Wow.
And so we petitioned the railroad and they tore it down. But before they did, yours truly measured it, photographed it, and drew it out in CAD. And this was
Hope you use
long
the right
before.
math.
Well, you're right. Long before I ever, thought about museum exhibits or anything like that, it originally it appears to be a tan color. I did a test piece, and I just didn't love a 3.5 foot long tan building.
What's the siding? Is it like that asbestos shingle stuff?
No, it's a kind of a lateral tongue and groove.
Really?
Which was a common
Isn't that
type of
shiplap?
shiplap. I've substituted clapboard.
Yep.
A, you can't tell the difference,
It'll
and
be
B,
just fine.
to try to do tongue and groove would have been insane.
Yep.
In later years, from about 19, the late 1940s until it was torn down, it was barn red.
Probably looks a
And
lot better in that color.
I love barn red for a lot of reasons, especially when I'm working with wood, actual wood, because I can weather it, distress it, fade it. I can do whatever I need to do to make it look the way I want it to look.
Yep.
And I think that becomes extra important when you're working on a really long building. So that building's actually 90% done. And it was basically a cross dock building. They had two tracks that were alongside it, and they used a special a forklift ramp called a boxcar special. And basically what they did was they lined up the doors of the boxcars on each track, opened them
Steel
up,
plate.
steel plate right through to the next boxcar. So they didn't have to switch the cars around. But they had probably at any given time at its peak about 10 cars. And basically they offloaded it right into trucks. There was no warehousing in the building itself. They were just constantly moving packages and boxes back and forth all day long. And they did have a switcher that was dedicated to that building. Now it probably handled some of the other local stuff. Adjacent to that building was an interlocking tower. And that interlocking tower controlled all the switches. A half mile east and a half mile west of the tower itself. And the tower was a little bit unusual for New Haven towers. A lot of the New Haven towers you see, especially along the shoreline division, were brick with a pagoda roof.
Yep. Or
This is an
stucco,
old
right?
or stucco, correct, yeah. This tower was an older tower. It was wood. It was actually clapboard. And as luck would have it, Walters made almost an exact replica of it, with the exception of the roof.
Wow.
And so I scratch built the roof,
Does it
the
have that
window.
pagoda style roof, though?
No, it actually just had a four-sided peaked roof.
Yep.
But the actual interlocking tower had, I can't even explain what that architecture is called. I call it pain in the ass architecture, because leave it to that particular tower to have that roof. It caused me probably 10 extra hours of work to get the math right. But I finally did. So I've got a very, very, very close facsimile to that tower. And then what we were talking about before we started recording, on the other side of that freight house was a farmer's co-op, Eastern States Farmers Co-op, which was a farmer's exchange, which was built in the early 1950s.
Rail served, like an Agway-ish kind
Rail
of thing.
served, yeah, rail served,
Yep.
and that company, Eastern States Farmers Exchange, became Agway.
Oh, wow.
So that building also became Agway, and it remained Agway up until about 3 years ago.
So are you doing it as an Agway or as an Eastern States?
So I'm doing it as Eastern States Farmers Exchange.
Yep.
So that's version one.
So the only thing you're post-dating is that I can see so far is the color of that big long building.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and this building didn't exist. The Farmers Exchange building didn't exist until 52.
Oh, I see.
So it's 20 years post, the rest of the
So
exhibit.
it's
And
a
I'll
lot more
explain.
modern looking than the others.
It's a cinder block building,
Yeah.
with a slight peak on each end. But it had three track doors. And I suspect, they picked and choose where they wanted to spot the boxcar, depending upon what the contents of the boxcar were.
Yeah, or how many
They
boxcars
got
they were
it.
dropping off.
Yeah. Oh, they got, bales of hay. They shipped out bales of hay. They, got in seed, animal feed, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm doing that in HO scale for this piece of the exhibit. But then I'm doing a version in O scale, one version in O scale that will be strictly Agway, that I'm going to present to the last owners of the company who are friends of ours.
Okay.
And then finally, the building now is the Franklin Children's Museum. And I love the fact that they were able to make use of the building to renovate the interior to create this space. And the people that own this museum are killing it. I forget what the number was, but in the first 6 months, they had like over 50,000 visitors to this children's museum, or some crazy number like that.
So is this what you mean by three of the same structure?
Yeah,
But it's
so
two
the
different
first,
scales.
two different scales, yeah,
China
so the
doesn't
first.
count, right? I mean, now have you done much in other scales?
Well, I've done some in O scale. I really like building in O scale.
I'll bet.
The only problem I have with O scale is that it's just, comparatively speaking, so big.
Right. A lot of material,
And
a lot of real
as big as
estate.
our house is here, we're constantly having this conversation of, well, where are you gonna put that? And I don't have a good answer.
Ha!
So in fact, I am,
You're parking on the street already, right?
well, when I'm using my side of the garage, yes, I am. I'm
Yeah.
parking in the driveway, but I'm donating all the pilot models that I did for the structures that I manufactured, all those dioramas to, Model Train Museum in Deerfield Beach, Florida. And they'll go to a good home and be displayed down there.
How do you even know about that place?
Because my buddy Bob Leonard runs it.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So he's been kind enough to take them and offer to put them on display there. So, they'll be on permanent loan. So the third version of this building, which is also O scale, is going to be presented to the museum, and it's going to be a transitional piece that shows the first third of it being Northeast Farmers Exchange and their colors and dated to the 50s. And then the middle third will be Agway and be a little more modern and their colors. And then the last third will be the Children's Museum, which is now a bright purple color.
Not going to be that.
And so in the first third, there's open garage doors with hay bales. The second third, there'll be people loading milk cans onto trucks. And the third version will be, parents holding kids' hands walking into the front door.
Jeez.
So I'm looking forward to that.
So you haven't
So
actually started that one, right?
I have not started that. The interlocking tower is basically almost done, probably about 75%. The freight house is probably about 90% done. The second piece of the next exhibit, which will be a year from December now, is the original diorama that I did, which is the diorama that has the train station in the center of town and the industry ancillary industries. I'm bringing that home, taking the fascia board off of it, enlarging it width wise. There are things about it that I learned after I built it that I should have done,
It's always the
like
way.
taller fascia board, which would have made attaching the skirting underneath a lot easier. So I'm going to adjust for that, but I'm also going to create. It's going to end up being a rectangle where now, if you remember, it's kind of a free form shape,
Yep.
but it'll be a true rectangle. It'll be 42 inches wide,
What's the
and then it's.
substrate of everything? Is it on a piece of plywood?
It's cooked spaghetti, yeah.
2-inch foam?
It no, it's all plywood.
Yeah.
And in some cases with foam on top of it.
Have you looked at how much plywood costs lately?
Oh,
It's unbelievable.
I keep the receipts for everything because I've got to if I want to be reimbursed.
I'm seeing $55, $65 sheets of plywood.
Yeah, it's just crazy. So I've got about by the time I'm done with this, should take me right up into the next exhibition time, and I'll probably have that delivered back to the house from storage in the next 30 to 45 days.
Wow. So even during baseball season, you can do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously my time is a little tied up and work has been busy, which is good and bad. The last thing that I'm working on is, and you know that occasionally I get away from our hobby. It's like squirrel. Okay. So Sam called me up one day and he said, "Hey," he said, "I just got the plans for a Star Wars Imperial Walker, and
I did this.
I'm 3D printing this thing, and so I went over there. I looked at it. First of all, it's like 2 feet tall.
Right.
The thing is massive.
Must look really cool.
It does look really cool. So I said, print me one of those. And it has about 100 pieces. It
Okay.
took, we only have one 3D printer. It must have taken close to a month to print. So we printed it. I got it mostly put together. And it's
Not
just a fun
painted,
thing.
or are you painting the parts as you do it?
So it's a beautiful thing about a lot of the Star Wars stuff. There's not a lot of painted detail. So we printed it in a light gray color. To me, it was still too dark. So I found it's almost a white Rust-Oleum primer. It's called Perfect Gray. And so I got a couple of cans of that, and I sprayed it to give it a base coat, and I'll add some weathering on top of that. The interesting thing is from a
Perfect
research
gray, huh? And
standpoint.
is it flat?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And if you're looking for like a really, really light gray primer, I recommend it.
Yep, I'm writing it down.
So, through research, what I realized is, it's a movie, right? All these things are make-believe. There wasn't a ton of weathering. I'll probably add, a little bit. I'm doing, panel lines.
Yeah, a little bit of a wash for the, yeah.
Things like that. I'll probably do some blast marks. But and it just there's no real gluing required with this. It all just kind of snaps together. It's
Really?
beautiful how it goes. Yeah, it's got an interior. It's
Who
crazy.
designed it? Just some guy on the internet?
Somebody who is crazier than us.
Yeah.
So
Want to know somebody like that.
Sam texted me the other night. He said, "Hey, I just bought the plans to the Millennium Falcon." And he said, "This thing is 42 inches in diameter.
Didn't
How
you
big?"
build one of those back
I
in the
did.
day?
I
Yeah.
did. And it was a very, very sophisticated kit. It took like 2.5 years to build.
Yeah. Where is it now?
It's my buddy who lives next door owns the Sloan Valve distributorship in New England.
Okay.
And he's got an office and warehouse in Walpole, and he's got it displayed in his conference room.
Nice.
But the one I built was probably 32 inches in diameter. I can't imagine building one that's 42 inches in diameter.
I'm pretty sure I saw that the first time I went up to your place.
Yeah.
Maybe to shoot the DVD or something.
No, it was at, long after we did the DVD.
Oh, okay.
I started building that when I was had the townhouse in Bellingham.
Gotcha.
But it took it's one of those deals where you get a box of parts every month.
Oh, yeah. I remember you talking about that. I'll bet we could listen to old podcasts and you were talking
Yeah,
about
no, I'm sure it's on there. I'm sure it's
it.
on there. So that's those are the things that are keeping me busy right now. I'm looking forward to oh, and I also at our museum we have a monthly speaker series. And I do it usually once or twice a year. We bring in people, we have our chairperson will speak. In August, it is the 81st anniversary of the dropping of the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And the gentleman who flew the plane that dropped the bomb on Nagasaki was a guy by the name of General Charles Sweeney. He was a major back then. That was only his really his second or third combat mission. He was a test pilot. He was
Jeez.
one of the wingmen for the Hiroshima bombing
Tibbetts, yeah.
3 days earlier for, and he was a kind of a buddy of Paul Tibbets, but he had so much flight experience in the B-29 because of his test piloting that he was selected to fly this mission. Well, he was originally from Quincy. And he wrote a book called War's End, which talks about his experience in the military, how kind of being in the right place at the right time
Yeah.
led to chosen for this mission.
Feel like we talked about this on one of the shows because you ended up meeting the guy, right?
I met him, yeah,
Yeah.
and turned out he lived in Franklin for a while, but I never knew that until after he died. So anyway, I'm doing the I'm speaking about that event in August.
Wow.
And to go as a show and tell, I bought a 1/72 scale B-29 that was accurate for his plane, the boxcar.
So you're gonna build that too.
Yeah, which unlike the train BOX, it's BOCKS, named after the pilot of the actual pilot of the plane who didn't wasn't the pilot on that mission, a guy by the name of Fred Bock. So I thought, well, I'll build this plane and I'll do a show and tell. And then I realized, well, this plane was so substantial in a lot of different ways that I really need to have something to compare it to. And so I bought a B-17 and I'm going to build that and just to show the size difference.
Who's making these kits these days? I mean, back in the day, I remember it was Revell or
Yeah, no, it's there are a lot of companies now that do the I don't know the name of this particular
nothing
company. I
I'd
mean,
recognize, I'm sure.
nothing you'd recognize. It's
Yeah.
not, Tamiya or any of those
I
types
can't
of
tell you how many submarines
Monogram, Revell.
and tanks and artillery
Oh,
pieces and
yeah.
battleships.
So I've got that coming up,
I was always looking to build stuff, you know. It wasn't until I started model railroading that I had something I could that had legs, you know, that I could stay with.
Right. Well, and it's one thing to build something. It's another thing to be able to do something with it
Well,
after
that's
you
the
build
thing,
it.
right? You build your plastic submarine and you put it on a stand in your room, or you hang the plane from a string from your ceiling, you know, and that's pretty much it, you know.
Yep. Absolutely. So yeah. So that's it. That's what I got.
Interesting, interesting. Well, something tells me with a little luck, we'll do this again.
Yeah, we will.
And our goal, of course, is to not take 4 months in between, but I will tell
Well,
you
we've got
that
reason.
4 months went by fast. Well, it
Yeah,
was 2 months from the last one, but then it was 4 months before that. So it's funny how time flies when you're doing stuff and having fun.
As my uncle used to say, time's fun when you're having flies.
There you go.
So.
All right, until next time, my friend. Have a good one. Good night, everybody,
Okay.
or good afternoon, or
Bye.
whenever you're listening to this.